Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy.
Hi, I'm Mr. Cutlets, Josh Ozersky, the formerly famous food writer, James Beard Award winning Schmagegi. I'm here at Roberta's, that is in Bushwick, New York, a fantastic location where the Heritage Radio Network broadcasts its pirate signal out of. And my beautiful co-host Stephanie Cohen is out of town at the moment. Pour one out for her. She'll be back next week. But the fact is, she'd have a hard word getting in anyway this week, because I have a guest today who is one of my favorite people in New York and a true mensch of the restaurant business, Mr. Marco Canora. Hello, Marco.
How do you do? Marco the Mensch.
Jack, is Marco close enough to the microphone? Can his voice be heard audibly? Yes, I'm getting the thumbs up.
Okay, good.
Now, the fire's not going, but the gloaming is outside. It's freezing weather, yet it's warm in here with our talk of money and gluttony. We have a bottle of Rocca Porciata Nero d'Avola. My fiance, Denit, is here with us. Oh, shit. I guess the cat will be out of the bag, and luckily nobody in either of our immediate families will be listening. Marco, briefly tell me, what are your restaurants that you are the chef of?
The first one was Hearth in the East Village.
Well, that wasn't the first one.
Well, the first one I own that was really all mine.
I know that I've been talking a lot, but maybe just for the audience,
mm-hmm.
I would like to give a brief sketch. Marco Canora is actually, he is a cook's cook, and as such, he was very close to the center of the historical change in New York cookery that happened when Kraft opened in 2001. He was Tom's underboss there.
He was the
chef de cuisine at Gramercy Tavern in its first ascendancy, and when Tom Colicchio first became famous, and the current style of simple, understated,
well-executed
food that Kraft made big, and Marco really was the guy at Kraft, and certainly, you know, in terms of the working the line.
Yeah.
And then he left Kraft and opened up Hearth, and also NCME. I don't know, RIP, maybe you want to say something
RIP,
about it.
Yeah.
What was NCME? Tell people what NCME
was. NCME was, you know, the first full-on Italian restaurant that I did in New York. And I hope to do another one because it just didn't work out the way I would have liked it to.
Now, how is it NCME was a very elegant Northern Italian restaurant on 7th. It's still there, in fact. And
it
still is it still your food?
Yeah.
Or is it just in name only?
No, Brian Hunt, who was the chef de cuisine under me there, has stayed there and kept that place afloat, and he continues to do it. God bless the guy. I mean, it's a tough operation.
It's a hotel.
It's a hotel.
Now, wasn't it true that you told me that Marco and Paul were Paul Grieco, his partner, who's an equally significant wine person in New York restaurant life. They got out of that with their lives, basically.
Inherently, Paul and I are really above board operators, and the reason why I went there was that, you know, I thought to myself, you know what? We don't abuse people. We don't not pay people overtime. We don't do shift pay. I mean, everything we do is very, very much above board to the rules. And I kind of thought, you know, well, so what if the hotel is going to pay for the cost of this stuff, I could deal with the rules because we've always played by the rules. And it just turned out to be a little more difficult than we had anticipated.
Well, I thought it was interesting because sort of thinking about it in culinary terms, I just wanted to underscore to people that the restaurants, I mean, although it didn't work out as a business for you guys, you were turning out some very fine food there.
Oh, well, the horrible thing was is everybody loved that place, and all my colleagues loved it, and my friends, and, you know, and the bloggers and the reviewers. I mean, we got treated very well. I mean, I wish Bruni had given us 3 stars. I'm not going to lie. But people loved it, and we were busy. And that was kind of, that's what kind of made it difficult, because it was a success story, and people did like it, and I was incredibly proud of the food we put
out
there.
Well, Bruni, you got screwed with him. You got screwed with him. Like, he said, like, oh, you can see the Mamma Mia. You know, that was really when he was at his most cattiest, you know?
Yeah.
And Platt screwed you too, but you saw that coming. You didn't know that.
Platt did, which really, I think.
Now, I need to underscore, though, that I don't want to, Platt, I already have bad mouth, like, I'm not going to, Platt.
I'm not going to bad, I mean, already. Listen, I could voice my opinion, right? Because that's, that's all he does.
That's right. You're here. I mean, you can say it on your own.
I could say whatever I want, right? I mean, they could say whatever they want.
100%.
If I have a forum, I can say whatever I want.
That's right.
So what I will say is that the thing that bugs me most about not only him, but many of the people, is that they liken Hearth and they likened NCMA to Kraft. And they said, when we opened up Hearth, people called it Kraft Light. And then when I thought that was finally over and I opened up NCMA, an Italian restaurant in a hotel in Midtown, and Platt went and said how it was very much like Kraft. I mean, really? I can't seem to figure out any similarity between NCMA and Kraft.
Well, this is a good point.
I mean, that blows my mind. I mean, it was a complete a la carte. It was full on Italian for one, right, and Kraft isn't.
Well, let's tell people who
we're
maybe
in a hotel in Midtown.
Well,
which Kraft,
Marco,
is downtown in the Flatiron District.
But let's assume not everybody may actually have eaten in Kraft. The defining aesthetic of Kraft restaurant is to take a single thing, whether it's a protein or a vegetable,
right,
or whatever.
It's the old steakhouse, everything a la carte.
Everything's a la carte, and it basically is just with like butter or like thyme, salt, whatever. Like, there's no sauce.
Well, it kind of morphed into something a little different as time has gone on.
But
when it opened,
what was the idea of it when it opened? And what is the idea now? So we can understand this better.
I was fortunate enough to have the first conversations with Tom about what Kraft was going to be. And what I always tell people is that, you know, Tom and I would talk about how I would talk about the meals I had at home, like when I was on vacation, not on vacation, during the holiday, Thanksgiving, Easter, Christmas. These are all big festive holiday meals. And not only just the holiday meals, but even growing up, the way you ate at home growing up. This idea of everything to the center of the table, nothing was composed. You know, like when I grew up, my mom didn't make, you know, chicken breasts with Brussels sprouts and bacon and a chicken jus that's flavored with lemon and cardamom or whatever. I mean, it was like the chicken's there and the salad's there and the veg is there and the potato thing is there. So we just wanted to take that idea and turn it into, you know, make a beautiful space, very much of the time in New York, and do it elegantly. We got all these copper things. So the idea is everything to the center of the table and everything just by itself.
Very, very powerful idea.
Yeah, I loved it.
I think that we need to take a break. And when we come back, I'll thank again the wonderful Fairway Company for sponsoring us. But I want to talk about these kind of dishes, Kraft and otherwise, on the Mr. Cutlets Show. Fights problems with bigger problems. Sings the ocean falling off.
Just lined up on you would. You won't be happy till the bottle's broken. You're out swimming.
Hi, this is Josh Ozersky, and this is the Mr. Cutlet Show. You heard Elliott Smith because we're paying tribute to the dead artists of the aughts in all our music. What do you call it? Interstitial music. No patches this week. I'm here with Marco Knorr. And by the way, Marco, before we go into further discussions of gastronomy, do you know how great the olive oil program at Fairway is? Have you bought olive oil at Fairway?
I remember you... speaking of it a while back, like 6 or so months ago.
Fairway sponsors this show. It's just a coincidence, but I am already there. You know, like whenever I like something, I tell everybody how great it is, and they're like, oh, Zersky's a shill or whatever. But the if you can't work up an enthusiasm for their olive oil program, and it's the best retail meat, too, in my opinion, by far.
Well, I mean, I would love to go there, but it's too far away. There's too many closer options for me.
I understand that. All right, well, Fairway is sponsoring our show, and we have a big shout-out to them. But to return to what you were saying about these sort of uncomposed dishes with the groaning board, you know, and the Hamish service. Now, you, really, your restaurant that people associate with you is Hearth more so than NCMA.
Well, yeah, especially since NCMA is not, I'm not affiliated with it anymore.
But I mean, like those, it is funny that Platt would say that it was Kraft Light because those sort of complex composed dishes, that's not really necessarily what I think of when I think of your food. I don't think of an uncomposed dish either, like a Hearth. What's a typical Hearth dish? It's a thing with a thing and a something
well,
else.
Well, you know, I like variations of single things. So if I do, you know, like for New Year's Eve menu, the first course I did a bunch of raw fish on one plate, like different raw fish, and then I did it with celery and citrus. That's what the menu said,
right?
But, you know, the celery was in, you know, almost 4 or 5 different forms.
Right.
And the citrus came in the form of, you know, 5 or 6 different kinds of citruses. So this idea of, yeah, I want it to sound simple and keep it simple, and I want you to taste what it says you're going to taste, but to play with variations of a single theme is what I really love to do.
I think that what we're getting at here, Danit, is the simplicity and its discontents, to paraphrase Freud. The fact is that what we call simplicity is often not so simple.
Exactly.
I think that what you are a true cook's cook, and even though you're not like Italian in the sense of being like...
off the boat, speak it.
Right. You have that kind of an approach. And it's exemplified, I think, especially illustriously here at Roberta's in the kind of simple foods that they make. You know, there's a certain kind of insouciance, a kind of an effortlessness, an unconscious kind of like Taoist bliss in the way that those kind of cooks, when they're in gear, as it were, can throw together 3 or 4 things that seem almost like prearranged in the universe. Mm-hmm. People like that. They see on a menu, everyone pretends to do that. Like they say, veal, trumpet mushroom,
right,
preserved lemon,
right, you know, and that's it,
right, you know, like,
and then that's all you get, stapler. And it's kind of crappily, and it's not even done well,
right, and it's not done well, or it is, you don't know, right, by looking at it. I mean, there's a certain thing where people, I think, sort of portray, and you see it in other things too, like you see it in pop music, where these like alternative music stars portray themselves as these naifs, and they show like the picture on the back of the record is like they're a picture of them when they were 6 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To show you how innocent they are, and they all sing like alfalfa with the warbling voices.
Right.
But like, you know, they're
and not so much just stylistically, but also I think an important part of what Kraft was about, and kind of what I aspire to be about, is that, you know, it's not about reinventing the wheel, and it's not about being overwrought and trying to be overly ambitious to where, you know, it's impossible to succeed, but just solid execution of things. You know, like finding something good and just preparing it but doing it really well.
Yeah, I think
doesn't happen a lot.
Well, that's the craft thing, but you just said you like to have 5 different kinds of celery.
Well, that's not what I do in every dish, but that's kind of what excites me. Like when I want to be ambitious, like I don't want to say, you know, fish with this, 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 that, and the other thing, and all this crazy, wacky stuff. Like, I love the idea of raw fish with celery and citrus. Right. And it could be just cut up celery with a squeeze of lemon and olive oil and salt, and that's awesome. But, like, I don't want to mess with the flavor profile of what makes grapefruit juice and celery and raw fish is perfect.
Right.
Like, I don't feel the need to have to go and try to change that. So what I'll do is I'll take those things and I'll just do more stuff with it. And that's not how I approach everything, but that's what kind of excites me. Like, I don't want to create new flavor profiles.
Right.
Like, well, red snapper with rosemary and lemon. That's simply grilled red snapper with rosemary and lemon, like a whole fish.
Right.
You know, that is just, that is perfection, right? I mean, that's, and I don't have a problem with that.
I know, but I mean, really, don't you feel gypped? Like, I mean, to me, if you go to a Milos or something, guys like you just get salt and olive oil.
Guys like you get bored with that shit.
I don't get bored with it. I'm of all the, no, in the entire food press corps, no one has a greater capacity for monotony than I do.
It's, yeah. I mean, it's hard to impress. It's hard to impress guys like Frank Bruni who eat out 345 days, nights a week. It's like, or Adam Platt. Like, you have to hit these guys in the head with a 2x4.
Well, that's right.
If you want them to be like, wow, it's hard to wow that guy. It's almost impossible to wow that guy.
That's right.
And, but a lot of great restaurants get beat up and subsequently fail because of a tepid 1-star review. And it's really not because they were doing anything wrong as much as it was they didn't do anything to really resonate with these guys who
let's
eat out 340 nights a week in Manhattan.
Well, let's try to locate the golden mean then, all right? So on the one hand is a fish with a lemon on it, and another one is a mushroom with butter on it. Or something.
Right.
And then on the other side is the awful Angapachka, overwrought, postmodern nightmare we all set up. But what about in the middle? And then the middle is somewhere there's like, and I think that this is where your sweet spot is.
Well, there's plenty of people. I mean, Paul LeBrand at Cortone, right? I haven't eaten there yet, but everybody I know and respect who has eaten there has loved it. And like, he's doing something very ambitious and very much on the opposite side of red snapper with lemon and rosemary, right? I mean, his food is not about that at all.
I find it a little sterile. I only ate there once, He is a consummate technician, the highest order, and has a vision, too, as an artist in his way, but there's something that's cold and
yeah, I mean, there's that's a common argument.
There's
common
something that's over-meticulous in his food.
Right.
But then again, that's just who I am. Like, I respond more to, the sort of...
And I might have more of an appreciation for that because of realizing how hard it is to achieve.
Right.
Than, like, a layman or a critic who comes in and just wants to have a great dining experience.
Well, the other thing, Marco, too,
like, at Per Se, for instance. Like, I ate there a month ago, and as a chef, it completely baffles my mind how perfectly run that restaurant is. From the from a guy who's been running restaurants and running kitchens, like it's always a challenge to get things right.
Right.
And to see that on that level done right to precision, every single move and step, it's just fucking, it's mind-boggling. It really is.
But on the other hand, and I'm sure it's true there, but a lot of places, I see that because I'm the soigné table. You know what I mean? But like some asshole comes in like on a Wednesday night.
Well, that's, listen, that's another big game and kind of problem with, the review system in New York City, because it's like everybody's had. And once you're had, like Ruth Reichel, that piece
we got to take a break.
Okay.
I think this shows, though, how rich these.
But I have a good point to make when we get back.
Or can you hold it, because we're going to take a quick break.
All right.
I'm Josh Ozersky with Marco Canora, and this is the Mr. Cutlets Show.
The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup? or disappear into the putter's ground. When the man comes around, hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing, multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum, voices calling, voices crying.
Well, I'm Josh Ozersky, the man who comes around. I'm here at Roberta's on the dime of Fairway, and they're our sponsor tonight on the Heritage Radio Network, and I'm here with Marco Canora. Marco is, of course, the chef at Hearth and Terroir, and we're going to talk a lot about both those places in both this and the subsequent show. But Marco, you are just making an important point about critics that people know what they look like.
Well, I wanted to mention that piece that Ruth did when she went to Le Cirque. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that's very relevant, and I think that that happens often, and I think that, you know, it's rare to find the restaurant that continues to strive to be ambitious and that continues to strive to be perfect and has their eye on the prize every day. I think that that's rare.
It is rare.
And I think that she really made that obvious when she went.
Yeah, but first of all, they knew who she was in the wig too. I think she plays that up.
But you can't deny that Joe Schmo on a Wednesday night,
it's true,
who nobody knows and he gets the shittiest table,
right,
has a much different experience than, you know, than Frank Bruni or Adam Platt when they come in the first 3 months or 6 weeks of the restaurant.
No, there's no question. That's the thing that I used to tell people when I was doing the bag on Grub Street, that they say, oh, well, you know, you get free meals, whatever. Like most of the time, I don't get free meals. I mean, as you know, I dropped two bills at Terroir the other night. But I mean, like, it's me, so I'm always getting the nice pork chop and everything. So it's like 15% better food for a writer, whoever they are.
Right.
Or a regular. It doesn't have to be a writer, but like somebody who's valued versus somebody that may never show up again.
Yeah, you know? I agreed.
But you were talking before about Paul at Cortone.
Right.
And he's a wonderful chef, and it's a great restaurant, and Drew's a triumph for Drew, really. Especially.
Yeah, big time.
But I think that there's other guys that I like who I think have as refined an aesthetic as Paul, or maybe not quite as refined. I mean, he really is out there, but who cook very refined food that's closer to sort of that. I mean, there's this sort of,
well,
like
Michael White at Marea, right?
I mean, well, yeah.
I mean, he's all over the board, but he gets unbelievable fish,
right?
And then he like will roast the whole thing, but he'll do it. You know, the fish is unbelievable, and he roasts it perfectly, and he seasons it really well, and uses a great olive oil and all that stuff. And it's like he raises red snapper with rosemary and sea salt to a new level.
But I bet there's,
and everybody's eating it up, right?
Yeah, but I bet there's, I don't think that he, it's just, I don't think that, like,
well, he does a lot more. I mean, I'm not taking, I mean,
no, but there's always an extra step with him. There's always an extra technique. I wasn't even thinking of him, but no, but he's kind of like,
who were you thinking of?
Well, I was thinking of John Fraser at Dovetail.
I haven't eaten there either.
Who I think is a great cook. And Harold,
he's definitely a great funny guy.
Oh, what else?
God,
what
sugar, fucking, that another guy one is hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And then Harold, too, you know, the Perilla. But really, John has really succeeded in doing a fine dining white tablecloth restaurant that still feels warm in that Italianate mm-hmm. way. And I haven't quite been able to put my finger on it.
Yeah. And man, it's so hard to fall in this town. It's easy to fall into obscurity quickly, you know? And I feel like he, you know, for as good as he is, like, I don't know, he deserves to get more play.
He does. Well, there's a bunch of guys.
And there's
like
so
that.
Many guys that do. I know.
Gordon Finn, the young chef de cuisine at Alto, who is very much the chef at Alto, you know.
Yeah, although, but listen,
Michael's
if you're ever
the chef, but I mean,
you can't
or
compare
Jordan at Hearth.
You can't compare John Fraser at Dovetail to one of these guys that you're mentioning of, because these other guys, if they're working for another chef, they're never going to get the real due, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't care who the chef de cuisine at Alto is. It's always going to be Michael White. And
right.
Even if Michael White is very... I mean, Tom was super generous with me
right.
in terms of like not hogging the camera. But at the end of the day, like it's his restaurant. So, but the difference is John Fraser, it's his name and it's his restaurant.
Right.
And the Perilla guy, it's his name
right.
and it's his restaurant. And they both deserve to get more
attention.
Well,
and they went attention. Out and they went out and did the horrible, like, I don't know if it happened specifically with him, but like... The horrible conversation where you sit down and try to talk your father-in-law into giving you $30,000 or whatever.
Right.
All, you know, I mean, look at poor Ed Brown. He cobbled together like 32 investors for yeah. anyone, you know. Then some asshole writes a review that, you know, it's like, the veal is, you know, beneath reproach.
Right,
know?
Right.
It's a shame. I mean, I see the other side of it, too. You know, they used to tell me as a food writer, Pete Wells from the Times, he said, you got to watch out that you don't go native. Because
what does that mean?
Well, it means like you hang around
oh,
with
right,
the
right.
people. Like I'm like the Donnie Brasco of chefs. Like
yep.
I hung out now with so many chefs that I side with the chefs over the writers. But on the other hand, the people that go out that's from Sea Caucus to spend the money for the night that they only get to go out once a month, they have to get somebody's got to give them the straight dope too. You know, I
yeah.
can't just ignore them either.
I mean, it's tough to sit. I mean. To sit here and go on record saying some of the things that I'm saying is probably not.
No, but I mean,
the
it's
the smartest thing to be
look,
doing.
I just think that.
But I mean, you know, at the end of the day, maybe it's kind of unrealistic, but my hope is that, you know, you just kind of do your thing and everything else, as long as you're doing the right thing. And I mean, like caring about your restaurant and caring about the people who work there and, you know, really trying to make it good and do that every day, that even if I sit here and say, you know, I can't believe Platt likened NCMA to Kraft, like, I think that's ridiculous. Like, I think it's a valid point, and I'm not worried about going on record to say it. I just, you know, we just plug along down at Hearth, and we kind of try to keep it as good as we can keep it on a regular, consistent basis, and that's all you can do.
Well, Hearth is a very, very good restaurant, and right now you're in a good position because you're kind of riding two horses with one behind, as my grandmother used to say.
What do you mean?
Well, she said you couldn't do that, but you have two restaurants that are two very different things now. You have
right.
Hearth.
Well, Terroir is not a restaurant.
Well, it's not, but Terroir.
I really want to make that super clear.
But and this is something we're gonna. We're having this. We're doing a special double feature with Marco, so we're going to come back with him next week and talk about new things, including the new Terroir on Harrison Street, and his book Salt to Taste, his new cookbook, and a bunch of other things that we neglected. But just to wrap it up,
okay.
I mean, really, I mean, it's hard. What? We're not going to capture the whole zeitgeist of gastronomy or whatever the fuck, you know. But like, the Terroir is in a lot of ways the thing of the future. Casual. You know, big mark. I mean, the profits are so much better, right?
Right. Well, it's definitely a better model. You know, whether it's the wave of the future, I don't know. I think, you know, there always is room for the more ambitious style restaurants, especially in a city like New York.
Hard for a regular guy though to do that without a big company behind him.
Yeah,
a restaurant.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That.
It's costly, but you know, the other thing is like New York City is one of the cheapest urban cities to eat in. Compared to many other in the world, and it's kind of frustrating that people aren't more willing to pay for great things. It's like, it seems almost as if everybody wants the best of both worlds. But, you know, you go to London or you go to Paris, you pay a lot more
no.
to eat.
Oh, you get whacked.
And, you know, everybody wants you to use, you know, local this and organic that, and then they bitch and moan if they pay $12 for
right.
a sandwich or... you know, $36 for an entree. And I'm sorry, you know, like Bev Eggleston's pork costs
yeah.
four times as much as Joe Schmo's pork.
Well, what, you know what it does is it pays off the guys that buy the Cisco pork chops and then say, you know, locally sourced pork.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
very
it's,
common,
it's
a, you know.
Yeah, very
and
common.
And to be fair, also, like, you know, people don't realize, like, the eye of a regular pork chop compared to the eye of a Bev Eggleston pork chop or a Berkshire pork chop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's twice as big.
Yeah.
You know? So they get the little thing and then they don't like it. All right, Marco, listen, we're going to do another show. We got a lot yet to talk
great.
About. We have opened some more. We have another pour another glass of wine. Here at Roberta's, on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop with the chicken and the brisket and the marrow.